Show live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Fabulous little network getting the truth out. Have you noticed that's what everybody keeps saying? You know, there's these common thread comments, you know. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, you know. Like, for example, the phrase, keep up the good work. And a lot of people tell me that. A lot of people tell a lot of people that. And don't know how to interpret it, really. It's like, you're not doing anything wrong. Keep on with it. I can't improve it. Yeah, well, I suppose everything can be improved. Nothing, because nothing's perfect. Well, anyway, this show being far from perfect. Even I was supposed to have Dr. David Manning on today. Anyone ever heard of this guy? He's a very interesting preacher from Harlem, and he has the largest Christian news network like in the country. And he's talking about a lot of the stuff that we talk about on this network. You know, Obama being a fraud, his economy being sold out from under us, the, what was his name, Andrew Breitbart assassination, you know, all of those kinds of things that the alternative media is now starting to cover. He talks about on this Christian News Network, which has a lot of reach, and they have this, what's it called, sort of a charitable company, right? You know how people normally pay their tithes to a church? Well, this tithe goes to a community sort of fund that buys and sets up and just continually operates new businesses so that people will have a career that they can start up with the help of the church, that kind of thing. And I thought, how interesting. That's actually doing something. You know, I may not agree with the whole link and slather of the idea, but trees by their fruits, eh? You have a look at people and you see what they're doing, okay? That should be where your judgment comes from. Some people, on the other hand, think that it's a brilliant idea to accuse people of things and make snap conclusions and jump to misconceptions at the first moment's notice. Don't just, you know, think to yourself 5 minutes into a video, I disagree with something he said, and then turn it off, kind of thing. Maybe you should just sit there and keep listening for a little bit, you know. Try and say to people, hey, look, I'm not going to turn away from this thing that I disagree with. I'm instead going to sit here, watch, listen, and study this thing that I disagree with and try to begin to understand it a little. So in both cases, whether it turns out to be a good thing or a bad thing, at least I know what I'm dealing with. You know, and even if it is a good thing, doesn't mean you have to join it. I'm not sure about joining sides with anything. It's a brilliant move. You know, you're on your own side at the end of the day. You have to take care of yourself and you have to take responsibility for yourself. Otherwise, you get people coming in and, well, basically, you start to need help once you don't know how to start taking care of yourself. You need assistance. You need people to, I don't know, give you out something at the unemployment line, you know, give you a bowl of soup during a depression. That's what's happening all around the place. That's why people are getting into all these little petty arguments and squabbles about what he said, she said, etc. Why do we do that? Come on. Wouldn't you just like to listen to what he or she said as opposed to listen to some third party's interpretation? You know, you ever been in an argument where somebody accuses you of saying something right after you said it, but they don't say it back to you in the same way? They hear it differently to how you said it. A lot of miscommunication, rather. And this is how most people have their understandings of words, understandings of politics, government, representation, etc. If you were to go and run in politics, there's a couple of very cynical rules that you must follow. And believe me, these are very cynical indeed. And they should be taken with great umbrance. Is that once you get into the parliamentary system, anything that you thought you would do, could do, or could accomplish will suddenly go out the window. And there's a reason for that. Because they've got rules that you have to follow. They have masses of other people that you have to convince of particular ideas. You have awful lots of unnecessary, in my opinion, reading, paperwork, etc. to siphon through before you can even understand what legislation you're passing. And that's if you can actually be bothered reading it at all. Most parliamentarians don't. You sit there, you watch Parliament TV in New Zealand, and they're passing like a law or two almost every day. And half the time, maybe more than half the time, there are virtually no politicians even sitting in that chamber debating. There's a handful. The rest of the chambers are completely empty. You could have heard a electoral pin drop. It's terrible, the state of it. That's why entering into politics obviously can't be the solution, because that entire system's been corrupted. It's been corrupted and turned into some poppycock showing of scumbaggery that doesn't seem to resonate with the common man. If you cannot communicate with the people you're supposed to be serving, how do you expect to serve them well if you don't know what their wishes are? And even more to the point, if you will not take heed what people's wishes are. The reason why politicians can do this, of course, is because they're not actually willed by the people to do anything. They're just asked. If they were forced, and if people were really serious about politics, they would take into it going in there, understanding that you are a slave, you have volunteered for this, kind of like going into the military. You know, you're somebody else's property all of a sudden. You don't have no rights, you don't have no privacy, you don't really have much choice about the matter, and you have to live and do the job that is given to you, the job that you volunteered for, serving the people. You know, I consider this radio show about the listeners essentially being my employer, and that I understand the slave-master relationship. And so I go, yes, master, I will provide you good shows, master. You know, that's how seriously one should take a job. Because after all, if you're sitting there and you're working day in, day out, and what have you, you'd wind up getting bored. Wind up getting slack, lazy. Your mind would start to wander. Especially if it's repetitive and dull and doing the exact same thing all the time. You know, no wonder people no longer have an interest in politics. Who has time? No wonder the politicians don't even read or even show up to vote on the legislation. Who has time? What's happened to all... We used to have all these devices and such that were supposed to save us time. How much time have we saved? Versus how much time has actually been stolen. You know, I feel that this is essentially what we're going through here. we are doing the time warp to the left and to the right in the political figurehead sense of the word, and we're not really going anywhere. It's like we're cars spinning our wheels in the mud, just praying that by some miracle we'll get out of it. When we're just sinking deeper and deeper, and we're going to have somebody else come along and help us. This is the dependency issue. This is the responsibility issue. And I think if you wanted to really cut down what the left or the right should stand for, it's a choice between dependency and responsibility. What the right call themselves, they're actually just socialist. And what the left call themselves is openly socialist. So they're both socialist. The real right wing, the personal responsibility side of it, is more akin to being libertarian, saying nobody can force anybody to do anything that they don't want to. If you're forcing them to pay taxes, then you can't, because nobody can put their hand in your pocket without you and them agreeing to a reasonable exchange. I'm an advocate of having a checklist, if you're going to pay taxes, of services that you want your tax dollars to be going into. Yeah, just a list. 100 or so different things. Healthcare, roading, electricity generation, railway. Things of a rudimentary nature that everybody sees and recognizes as important for the infrastructure of the country and hence the economy, right? Now, how many people do you think would wind up ticking the box service foreign debt? I don't think there'd be just too many of those. You know, somehow, I wonder, why is it then that we don't have a choice? And why is it then that that seems to be virtually the only box that gets ticked by the government? You know, to a certain extent, really, comparative to the rest of it, $400 million a week. The media, this is another thing. The media always tells us, you know, the very low range of things, you know, the very conservative estimates. And I've heard them say many times, even though it's also been said on mainstream news by officials of major banking heads and things like that from the BNZ, that New Zealand's getting in $400 million plus debt a week. And the media still says between $200 and $300 million. And they act as if it's in the past, like it's not still going on. And they just lose all trust of the public by doing this. Because back in 2008, when everybody was calling John Key a liar and exposing him pretty easily, he was a pretty thin veneer of a character. Now the media's starting to catch on with some footage that they haven't used, like, since 2008. Campaign promises and such. These people are too slow to react. Okay? This is why the citizen journalist is now almost, in my opinion, the most important character on the internet. Seriously. Who else has got the time? Who else has got the resources? Who else wants to take responsibility? Go out there to a protest with a camera, ambush a scumbag, ask him a couple of questions that he doesn't want anybody to know the answers to? Who wants to have that much fun? Because I can tell you, it's a lot of fun getting out there and chasing them down, sticking their camera in their face, insinuating naughty, nasty things about these elaborate characters of scumbaggery. It's a rush, man. And if you start getting manhandled by their security, it's even better because you can get it on video. And then later on, you'll get way more hits on your video. Okay, because that's the principle. The worse it gets, the better it is on video. All right? It's a simple rule. Have a look at all the disaster videos that are out there. People watch them. Why? Because they're fracking awesome. Just like people getting beaten to a pulp by police or something caught on camera gets viewed heaps of times. Now, is it that we're just kind of so measly and mongrelly and callous as to want to see other human beings hurt all the time? And that's entertaining for us. Like it's in some kind of Roman Colosseum. Well, frankly, yes. I love seeing people get pepper sprayed. I can't help it. And here's the reason why. It's very good for the cause because lots of people hate to see that kind of thing. And as soon as they start seeing it, they're all of a sudden up and in arms because they actually care for a change. That's why when things get worse, it can always get better because it allows you to direct attention onto things that actually really deserve that attention. Not entirely dissimilar in the way Rahm Emanuel thinks that you can't waste a crisis, as he's been quoted as saying. You can get a whole bunch of stuff in there that nobody else would normally let you have. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, phone lines are now open. So if you would like to call in, the number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And if you are planning to do something very fun in the near future, let's talk about it. Let's talk about having fun. Because, for goodness sake, everything's so depressing. Being fun. Yep. I think that's a brilliant idea. Why not? Let's have a good time, shall we? Let's have a few cackles and a few laughs and a few chortles and whatnot. This will be fabulous, darling. Mm-hmm. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. A show that is very, very, very concerned about how much fun we're having and how much is being taken away from us. And we'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, all across the world. The Schwarzenegger sense of the world. Now, I was talking about politics, what happens to you when you go into it and all this kind of stuff. And of course, this is talking from an outsider's perspective. You know, I haven't actually done the induction ceremonies and all of that thing. What I've been able to see, however, is an awful lot of politicians talk to them about a lot of things and understand from their perspective precisely what's going on here. And in a nutshell, it's boring, tedious, really hard work, difficult to concentrate, and takes a heck of a lot of time to accomplish anything good, which ultimately doesn't happen very often at all. But in fact, things that are very nasty, things that are very terrible and not that great happen all the time. Yes, they do, ladies and gentlemen. Why do you think your countries have been sold out from under you so quickly? Why do you think that everybody now is just idiotic? Why do you think that the universities are charging such massive fees? Well, it used to be free. Why do you think all this is happening? Why do you think the media are populated by a bunch of airheads and douchebags? The couldn't smell a story if they were in a bathroom. These people are terrible at what they do. They look very official, but they have no credibility. Me, I don't claim to have any credibility. And this is somebody else the other day said that I lost my credibility inside of the first 2 minutes of the show or something like that. And I'm just like, well, mate, you obviously don't do your research. So you've just lost your credibility. Because I've always said many, many times, I don't have any credibility. Don't expect it. It's not what you're going to get here. What you're going to get here is my honest opinion. A few facts and figures and what have you. But, you know, you'll have to check up on those yourself. Parliamentarians, on the other hand, they have to rely on what are so-called perceived experts who have credibility. Alleged credibility. Very, very alleged credibility. You know? And what do these people do? They work for massive companies. They pay them squillions to be a PR guy who has a few letters after his name so that the company who is ripping you off and destroying your nation's credit, environment, and economy looks good while they do it. Okay, that's all they are. They're just con men in suits called advisors. Couldn't advise them their way out of a brown paper bag. You know, there was a time when Kyoto Protocol was being called into action and everybody was thinking, oh, this will be great. With those carbon reductions and our increased efficiency, etc., etc., we'll make an extra $1 billion. Wait a second. Now that we've gone through a number of years of Kyoto, haven't we lost $1 billion? And they go, yeah, that's right. Perhaps it was a bit of a clerical error called a 200% margin of error. Said you're supposed to make $1 billion, and since it cost us $1 billion. Where I come from, that's called fraud. Outright fraud. And there's so much of it going on everywhere. It's so horrible to see. Because you see, good, hard-working, decent, honest people who've been busting their humps for the most of their life, having to deal with school propaganda BS, and then media propaganda BS, and then political propaganda BS, so that nobody ever tells them the truth. So, but by the time they wake up and they realise that they've been lied to their entire life, for many of them it's already too late. The best years of their life are gone and they never lived any single minute of them. You know, time is being stolen from all of us through distraction and convenience. We don't know what things are worth anymore, nor do we care because we didn't have to go and exert any effort in order to get it in the first place. We don't know how to save anymore. All we know how to do is get in debt to get what we want right now and then spend the rest of our lives paying for our mistake. Literally. That's what's going on. And people had best get wise and get real to this reality. We have a caller here, usually one of our best callers, because he's quite knowledgeable. The Greg, welcome to the program, mate.
Hey, thanks for having me, Vinny. I was thinking about what you were saying, and it inspired me to call in because I thought of the story of the boy who cried wolf, you know, the lie to the village people, and you know, they fell for it once or twice and three times, but then they stopped falling for it. So I was wondering, when is the boy who cried wolf going to kick in with this whole entire system? And I was thinking that's why I think they have to keep everyone so miserable, so they just don't realize the simplicity of that parable.
Well, you'll remember that in The Boy Who Cried Wolf, the only time when people stopped listening to the lie was when the lie was true and it was already too late to save their sheep.
Correct. So there is irony in that as well. So I'm wondering where we're at in that. And I say we, I mean the corporate we, of course. You know, I'm just visiting this planet. So how would we see if that applies? And I believe it does. I believe that that time has come. And now it's just a matter of those that are perpetrating, let's call it a scam, know that the only way it can be perpetrated is if they control or have some sense of control, perceived control over almost every aspect of what you are doing. You know, the schools, the media, your food, where you live, religion. It's the only way they could kick in on that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's quite difficult to corner the market on the influences in a person's life, but they've done it, right? And yet, despite that fact, there are smaller influences that are much more powerful on individuals because they're using the truth, right? So let's say, for example, how much would an hour of television be worth in terms of the information that you receive in, the enjoyment you get out of it, versus, say, an hour of Truth or Talkback radio? Would they even compare? Is it far more absorbing and far more interesting to listen to 2 hours of the Vinnie Eastwood show than it is to watch 6 hours of mainstream news?
Yeah, I would say, and I don't get paid for watching either one, so so it's a matter of what's in it for you, right? See, everything is... maybe there's another way to look at it. If everything is a scam and everyone is being lied to and they don't perceive the truth, you can almost put a gun to their head and ask them of what they believe in, even though it's not the truth, and they will think that it's the truth and they will lay down their lives for it. So it's become more of an aspect of life and death for people. I mean, look at the things that people actually go and fight for or try to defend on every aspect. So there's almost like a mortality gene that they've tapped into and activated that the lie must lock onto. And I don't want to get too ethereal or esoteric about it, but I've been researching that aspect about it, and I found it to be very interesting that it's the life and death aspect that must be, usurped or taken over before the lie can promulgate and be held in place.
Well, that was how slavery first originated, when people realized that they could use superior power or strength or whatever to enslave other people. And they used this by the constant fear of death. Because people were afraid of death, you could threaten them with death and get them to do things that they would ordinarily never do.
Yeah. And, of course, there's the commercial aspect. It allows people, in a way, to forget about what is actually going on and look at it critically. Here's an example. You know, people talk about school and what's being taught in school or which school they went to. From my perspective, the most degrading thing you can do to a child is grade them. So it doesn't matter what school or what level of school you've got. If there's any grading going on, you've already been degraded, whether you've gotten the A or the F or the, you know, the best grade or the worst grade. Just the very fact of being graded is degrading. Do you see?
Yeah, I do. And it's just more to the point that basically there's no such thing as grading. It is only degrading, okay? Like, for example, even if you got graded an A, that's still a degradation upon you because it's not all you're capable of. You're not just capable of getting this A. You're capable of actually rewriting the book that taught you how to get that A. Or if you get an A, it means not everybody else in the class got an A or something like that. So it degrades them. So it degrades you by limiting you to it to a, this is the highest standpoint you can get. And it degrades everybody else if they fall below that standpoint anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So then you have the academics with the high degrees. I mean, and they've been in there for so many years and haven't realized it, to kind of act as leaders for the rest that don't realize it as well. So more degrading is better, I guess.
Well, it's the blind leading the blind, essentially. And everybody's going to get real ticked off when they realize the person that's been leading them around this whole time was just as stark, dark, naked, blind as they are.
Yeah, I don't know about New Zealand, but they have bumper stickers on cars here that say, my student is an honor student in such and such school, or went to the University of... whatever. I want to make a bumper sticker. Yeah, do you have that there as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you see, things like that to make, you know, carry on an activity. I would want to make a bumper sticker. The only reason I'd send my child to any school is I thought they were a complete idiot. I mean, that would probably get me pulled over in 15 minutes or so.
Oh, I got a better one for you. The only reason I'd send my children to school is to punish them.
That's a good one, yeah. Yeah, in a sense, that's what it is. And I like that you bring up the concept of trauma-based mind control. And I think it starts in the schools and then the television itself. If you watch the news at night before people go to sleep, they read about murders and rapes, and or actually not read, but hear on television. And then they just turn the set off and go to bed. And they sleep with these heinous acts with a smile.
Mm-hmm. Well, because sleep is good. Sleep with blood and gore dripping out of the walls from a horror movie you just watched. Not good.
Yeah, so there's probably a very deep-rooted aspect to everything that's being spoken of that maybe is not being addressed. And it might call for not just a reform of the system, but a completely new system in place. And for lack of a better term, I don't mean system the way we think about it, but bringing up the schools again, well, we need to make schools better. Well, if there's grading going on, it doesn't matter what school it is. It's the actual approach and the actual function that's being performed. There's no quality there. How can you have any quality? It's all quantitative, not qualitative at all whatsoever. And the same goes for religion, and the same goes for government, and the same goes for every aspect of what's being taught.
Well, with the internet, your classroom is now your bedroom. Your classroom is now your living room. Your classroom is now everywhere. So I don't see the need for schools in general anymore. They're no longer relevant. Because what's the difference between sitting in a lecture theater with 300 other students at a university hall, listening to a lecturer read off of a teleprompter, or sitting at home watching that same lecture on video through Skype live as a student, okay? And you're sitting there, you're taking your notes, you've got your laptop out and all of that kind of stuff. All right, all of the systems that we've got in here are simply technologically decrepit, and they are there specifically, in my opinion, to hinder us being capable of freeing ourselves, to force us to go places that we don't want to go. At times, we don't want to be there. And then it makes us a slave to that clock again. You know, it's like we're enslaved in a million ways from every single direction on every single day. Just think about that for a moment, if you will, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be coming back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. The caller number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about history repeating. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific of radioactivity, the nation where everybody has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And if you want to call in to the show, the number is 218-339-8525. Say it a little bit slower, 218-339-8525. Well, maybe I could do it in a sexy female voice. This number is 218-339-8525. That was really creepy. Now, my very special guest is known only as Menace. And so naturally he's a good fit for the show. Menace, welcome to the program.
Thank you, bro. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Well, like you say, my name's Menace. I'm actually from the UK, living in a country called South Wales. Not to be confused with your South Wales. Currently co-managing a hip-hop show called Conspiracy Worldwide Radio. We called it Conspiracy Worldwide Radio because the conspiracy is hip-hop. Real hip-hop music, should I say, is not played on mainstream radio, which is where we come into the equation to provide a platform for real hip-hop to be played on. In addition to that, I run a magazine called The Hard Copy Magazine, which is a graffiti magazine, and run a monthly event called Spar Wars. Mm. In a nutshell, that's what I do.
So you're a player, but you ain't playing.
Exactly.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, you know, we had I've started to find quite a few anti-New World Order MCs. Have you found quite a few yourself?
Yeah, there's a guy called Immortal Technique. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
Very familiar.
Harlem-based MC. He's been doing his thing for the longest time now. He's selling quite well also, doing it independently, which proves that you don't need to sign to a big big major label. And, he's definitely exposing a lot of stuff, you know, himself, as well as, you know, of course, you've got Public Enemy, who have been doing it since, you know, the beginning of hip-hop. And beyond that, you've got people like NY Oil, another guy that's very vocal about the powers that be. But yeah, there's definitely a huge following right now of people, truthers, if you want to call them that, coming out.
Yeah. And truther culture, and I think we were talking about this over the break, that there needed to be sort of some kind of truther cartoon, you know? Because there's a conspiracy in everything sort of thing, and that's what the script would mostly be based on, just these zany cartoon characters going through zany stuff, and in the background there's all this Illuminati Freemason symbolism everywhere, and it's just basically completely well overdone sort of thing, and kind of poking fun at the fact that the conspiracies are everywhere, you know, and there's a market for every sort of thing. And there was even a mainstream media piece done on conspiracy theories and the marketing behind them and the industry that's starting to be built. And what they've recognized now is that the conspiracy theorist market is not only a big market, but it's a growing market, one of the world's fastest growing markets. People who believe in conspiracy theories that the world is run by evil people, right? And that there are lots of poisons and stuff like that in our environment. And people who want to be self-reliant because they believe that being dependent falls into a conspiracy. Like, there's a whole chain of products and services and companies that are now starting to become rather sizable now based on that market. The music market as well. There's only room to expand in conspiracy theories, isn't there?
Absolutely. I think what's funny, you mentioned the music industry. What's funny with the industry right now is that there seems to be this trend where every MC, every artist, hip-hop artist is successful. They haven't, if the fingers pointed at them, that they're in the Illuminati just because they're successful. Now, I don't think it's... I mean, I don't think it's accurate to really point fingers at every successful hip-hop artist or every successful music artistry, for that matter, and say they're, you know, a member of the Illuminati. I think it's ignorant. So the people that are, you know, now having this interest in, you know, finding the truth in the reality of the music industry, they're also hopping onto the bandwagon nowadays. They aren't doing the proper research. So I think that's part of the problem itself, not doing the research.
Yeah, I do find that very amusing. I'm not sure if you were listening before, but one of these people who was watching one of my videos said, oh, you lost credibility in the first 30 seconds or something, when I've said many times that I don't have any credibility, and so I can't lose any. And anybody who questions whether or not I have credibility automatically loses theirs, because if they could do any research, they would have known that I don't have any to begin with.
I mean, how do you react to these people that are saying, you know, that so many people in the music industry are members of the Illuminati just off the strength of their success? I mean, how do you respond to that personally, bro?
Well, it depends. How high have they gotten? What do they sing about? Where are the finances? If somebody is self-financed and they've been working as, say, they've been cutting up meat, for example, at a butcher to support themselves while they got on their feet, and they don't have a record contract with anybody, they design their own album work, they get all of this other stuff going. If they do that by themselves, and it's demonstrably by themselves, then it doesn't matter what level of success they have. They're somebody who doesn't need anybody else to help them to a degree, to the point where they would refuse anybody who comes along with a contract saying, oh, we'll do this, this, and this for you, but we'll also take this, this, and this from you. A person who's worked their entire, worked a decent amount of time, and everything that they have to show for it was because of their own hard work, they're not going to take that contract. They're going to tell that person to get the heck out of my my butchery before I throw this cleaver at you.
Speaking of butcheries, I mean, you got Lady Gaga, you know, turning up at whatever event it was, dressed up in solely meat, just wearing meat, apparently, a meat dress. How do you feel about Lady Gaga's affiliation with the Illuminati and, of course, everybody's accusations that, you know, most of her videos, for the most part, are full of symbols and, you know, a lot deeper than they're perceived to be.
Yeah, there is a heck of a lot of symbolism in her videos, along with many other artists and things of that nature. Madonna, you know, wearing the Baphomet headdress. You know, when it comes to suspicion about Illuminati involvement, you've got to see it many, many times, right? Like, for example, dark occult magic, if you want to do your research on that, you'll find out that there is an awful lot of it going on in some videos, particularly very high production value videos with big artists. And when you have a look at the very much lower artists who have much smaller budgets, who aren't really signed to major record deals, you don't see any of that symbolism unless that filmmaker is a truther and is trying to expose it.
To what extent do you think this symbolism is consciously implemented? I mean, do you think it's a conscious thing implemented by the artist personally, or do you think it's something that's implemented by the labels or by the video directors on a down low?
It's the producers primarily. A lot of producers, particularly in the music industry, they come from finance. And they give you a record contract, and what they do is they say, we're going to give you 100,000, we're going to give you a million or whatever to make your first album. And then they tell you to go spend, you know, live it up, you know, drink Cristal and take limos everywhere. Here's some music tickets. Here's some concert tickets. Here's a movie opening or something like that. You know, get yourself out there. What they don't tell the artist is that artist, in fact, has a bank account opened in their name. And all of the money that they wind up spending goes down under their name. And if they overspend, or if they spend a lot of money and they don't make it back through record sales, things of that nature, they're the one who winds up in debt for the rest of their life. And that's the real game here. Choreographers, the producers and all of that kind of stuff, they'll take somebody who who has a good voice, or in some cases not, just looks hot, and they'll just make a voice up, and do a little machine, or release some kind of album, or they'll go do some photo shirts. We'll have 7 different lighting techniques, and et cetera. You know, all of this big complicated stuff. Do you think the artist themselves comes up with all of that on their own? No.
The artist is smart enough.
Yeah, the artist at the end of the day is simply a pawn being played for the change in their pocket.
They just represent the henchmen for the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Well, they love it, you know, because it's like, wow, I'm living the good life. I'm getting free tickets. I'm schmoozing with the big boys, and that gives them some sense of superiority. You know, they think that all of a sudden they're better than everybody else because, hey, I've made it. Look at me. Not realizing that the only thing they've made it to is the line going towards a guillotine, you know. And it depends once you get to the end of that line, what are they going to cut off? Are they going to cut off your money supply? Are they going to cut off your creativity? Or are they going to cut off your head in some kind of sacrificial ritual at the Bohemian Grove as they eat your innards and then burn your body in effigy?
I mean, let's speak about that, you know, Bohemian Grove relation with some of these artists. A lot of people, there was speculation for a minute that Amy Winehouse was apparently, at her death scene, there was some kind of correlation with a ritual she had practiced, or something to the extent of that. I just wondered if you had any knowledge of that.
No, I didn't. Okay. I haven't heard anything about Amy Winehouse's sack refice. Now, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. Hour number 2 of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Caller line is open. 218-339-8525 is the number to call in. That's 218-339-8525. You can join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and join us the Vinnie Eastwood Show Facebook group if you want to. You can check out the other websites as well. Archives are always a good one. Get yourself to the Vinnie Eastwood Show featured archives page. By goodness, have we interviewed some big names. In fact, I'm just going to kind of crack it open here and regale some of these for you, because sometimes I can't even believe it myself, some of the people we've had on the show. Everybody's got a story, and my guest today is Menace, known only.
Hey.
You know? and so, you know, alongside Menace, we have people like George Norrie, Lindsay Williams, Jordan Maxwell, G. Edward Griffin, Webster Tarpley, Bob Chapman, Steve Quayle, Rick Simpson, Janet and Stuart Swerdlow, Len Horowitz and Sherry Kane, Dr. Rima Labo, Anthony J. Hilder, you know, Jason Burmis, Stan Deo, Dr. Paul Connett, Michael Shaw, Jarrah White, Reverend Ted Pike, Loretta Murray, just Michael Murphy, whole masses of huge amounts of talented people we have in the truth movement, and they've dedicated their lives essentially to doing something, and they usually are not doing it just for themselves. They're doing it because they feel compelled to, rather than being compelled to pay taxes to a degree. You know, it's like they're compelled to actually serve humanity in the best way that they know how. I talked about this on the show yesterday, Menace. You know, it's all about what can I do about it, and it's like, if you can write lyrics, if you can man a camera, if you can edit video, if you can man a microphone, if you can do anything, you know, there's a perfect place for you to build for yourself, right? You don't have to wait for anybody else to make it for you. Build it and they will come.
Exactly. Now, with regards to artistry, we were just having this interesting conversation moments ago. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk to you before coming on the show today was Jive Records, who I'm sure you're familiar with, home to Britney Spears, Outkast, and so many more artists. Jive Records, the American label. There was a recent news story that Too Short, a rapper from the Bay Area, Too Short, was asked by the Jive Records CEO and current Island Def Jam CEO, Barry Wise. He was asked to dumb down his lyrics, dumb down his content, literally, and strip down any social commentary from his music that's positive and talk bad about women. So there's this huge thing going on behind the scenes where I think a lot of your listeners and my listeners don't know about. I mean, how do you feel about this? The dumbing down of music and being controlled by, you know, these CEOs of these big labels.
Well, you know, the artist is as powerful as the CEO because the artist can just as easily say no. He'll lose his record contract, and he'll wind up having to basically start again. But the artist can still say no. The artist can still speak out. And thanks to the internet, the artist can still make and publish and sell his content, right? So I've come to the conclusion, and we had a jam with a couple of musicians a week or two ago, Menace, and we came up with some really cool songs, and some of them just off the cuff, and we do them in one take sort of thing. You know, they just flowed. And my mate says, "Oh, well, man, that's good, man. That's a song right there. We'll cut that. Just get a good producer." And I go, no, frack the producer, man. We'll do it, okay? We don't need any of those people. They need us more than we need them.
Because
without us, the artists and what have you, there's no content for them to pilfer.
Exactly. I mean, excuse me, you take somebody like Too Short. I think his situation was the case of him fearing his situation at Jive Records and his future at Jive Records. I think he was in a situation where he felt he was going to get dropped had he not dumbed down his lyrics. Or if he hadn't got dropped, then something deeper than that was going to happen. Like he was going to get caught up in this political matrix where he couldn't leave the label. Because what happens is, as you know, a lot of artists can't leave the labels. And find themselves wound up in, you know, this political mess. So there's that side where I think, you know, that does kind of hinder an artist's move, you know, and an artist not, you know, wanting to move from a label when they, in actuality they can because of repercussions of trying to leave. But what do I know? I'm not an artist. You know?
Well, they try to trap you in any way that they can trap you, basically. You know, think about revenue streams, for example. Like, let's say you've got a flock of chickens or whatever. You try to make sure that your chickens are happy and produce good eggs for you and what have you. And you try to make sure that they're well fed so that later on, when they've served their purpose, you can eat said chicken, right? And I don't think the way that record companies treat artists is really any different. They're basically farming them.
The artist is the product at the end of the day, and the label doesn't give a fuck about you for one second.
It's FCC regulations. Like, you can use the word frack.
Frack.
And for me, fracking is far fracking is a far more offensive F word.
Absolutely. So, where was I? I've lost my train of thought now. Anyway, the fact of the matter is...
They were talking about how the record companies don't give a frack about you.
Yeah. And you are just a product. Right. The same way the listener is a product. And I think what's happening now is artists nowadays aren't making music for humans. They're not making music for humans. The consumer isn't listening to music with their ears. They're listening to music with their eyes. That's the big difference, I think, now. The shift is people listen to music with their eyes rather than their ears. They care about what the artist is wearing, the materialistic side of it, over the substance side of it.
Well, there are occasions when you don't have that kind of thing. Like Susan Boyle, for example, perfect example of a female singer that is anything but eye candy and being hugely successful.
That's true. But I mean, for the most part, you know, there's no balance in the music industry. Let's just put it that way. And I think there should be. I mean, bringing it back to the videos, the visual side of our artistry we were talking about earlier. Let's talk about some of these references we do see in these videos. Like we were talking about Lady Gaga. I mean, with you being a truther and being super familiar with these symbols, can you break down, you know, for the people who are listening who might not be familiar with Lady Gaga, what goes on in the videos? Exactly what symbols are in Lady Gaga's videos that you've seen and know about?
Well, there's been a couple of videos that she's done where she's kind of dressed up as sort of like a Nazi stormtrooper, and people in the videos are like zombies and things like that, where she's and that's, of course, all reference back to Nazism, dark occult, etc. You know, this is who I serve. I'm a slave to this kind of mentality. There's things like being very macabre and very dark in some of the dances, and even the clothes that she wears. For example, you mentioned the dress made out of dead animal flesh, a dress made out of meat. You know, these kind of sick things are part of a mind control program, essentially, to basically make people more familiar with these sorts of symbols and ideas and concepts. And as anybody who's watched a horror movie for the first time in their life will recognize, it's very shocking. You know, it's very horrific. You know, you're like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre back in the 70s. Very disgusting. And yet when you have a look through, as horror movies have evolved and changed and what have you, you can look at something that's far more horrific than what was originally on the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre and think, oh, how quaint. And the music industry works in a similar way. It brings these kind of really disgusting, debauched, sort of hypersexual, hyperviolent, disrespectful, sort of disgusting view of the world, where it's all about revelry and not caring and just doing crazy things that appear just for the sake of being crazy. When the reality is, there's a very, very psycho mind behind all that symbolism and behind all that choreography. There's been times when she's doing dances, and they are the steps of sort of like a cult sort of indoctrination dances, and they do that in front of a massive audience, and they put symbols in their hands or things like that, like the sign of the devil, or the or as Jay-Z does, the sign of the Illuminati eye pyramid, and so on and so forth. So what's happening essentially is that the people who are live, you know, there at that moment, and even the people who are watching it on television, in essence become part of and contribute energy to these rituals.
I think it's interesting, taking it back to what you were saying about the films earlier, because of course we all know there's a huge existence of what we're talking about in the films before the music too, is that, you know, for several years, the past 3 to 4 years, we've been seeing a lot of alien films, a lot of UFO films being made. I think subconsciously they are trying to tell us something. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's all buttering up and preparing you for what's to come. You know, there's been a whole bunch of secret projects that have been declassified, Operation Bluebeam, and even Wernher von Braun, the ex-Nazi under Operation Paperclip, who became the head of NASA. And one of his assistants has come out publicly not too long ago, repeating what he told her once upon a time, that there were going to be 3 wars. There was going to be a Cold War, then there was going to be a war on terrorism, and then there was going to be a war from space, you know, with aliens and things like that, real or manufactured. And after that space war, or Star War, as you might want to call it, then that is the moment when all of humanity will wind up getting united as one under the banner of the New World Order, just sitting there and saying, hey, look, we're under attack by an outside, directly perceivable threat. So now let's all band together as one humanity under a world government, and then, well, bam, the elite have fulfilled their agenda. And all they have to do is project a few holographic images, blow up a few things here or there with well-placed charges, use a few classified aircraft that people wouldn't recognize as being human, and fly them around, blow some stuff up or whatever, kill a few high-level dignitaries, particularly those who were who were high up in the development of secret technologies, of course. You know, and all of a sudden everybody would think, well, my goodness, why wouldn't we want a world government? Look at this dangerous, dangerous threat that we face from afar. The only way to combat this very badly nastiness is to come together as one and fight back, you know. And, well, look, what you're doing then is you're fighting against yourself. You're fighting against freedom. You're fighting against individualism. You know, does a collective even exist? No, it doesn't. Because when you look at a group of people, there's no such thing as a group. It's only different individuals that simply happen to be standing together. They're all different. They've all got their own minds and thoughts about things, whatever. And that's why you shouldn't really ever try to unite people behind singular causes, I don't think, you know, huge amounts of people against one singular myopic cause, like, let's save the economy, you know? What a load of codswallop that kind of line is, you know? And it's only because people understand things in too simplistic a way and they see exactly what's put in front of them as opposed to what's behind what's put in front of them that they're so easy to manipulate.
We were talking to Greg Palast. Are you familiar with Greg Palast? I'm pretty sure you are. Greg Palast, our BBC investigative journalist. He's also done stuff for The Observer. We were talking to him last week on a show. We'd asked him about World War III. excuse me, and just what's going on right now. And his response to what's going on right now, as we both know, is happening right now. But of course, behind the scenes, like you said, you have fearmongers, the people we're speaking of right now. We have people like Alex Jones, who I think are a part of the bigger agenda, who were put there by the powers that be to create this agenda and fear. I mean, how do you feel about Alex Jones and people like Alex Jones who play that position of implementing fear in people?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, it was actually Alex Jones that woke me up. So I quite literally would not be here being active and caring about things the way that I do and being independent without seeing somebody doing it for themselves. And it kind of made my bollocks grow a bit, you know what I mean? To get out there and really do something. So there's that aspect to it, because some people react differently to fear. Some people will take fear as fear, and some people will take fear and turn it into anger, which is an emotion that connotes far more energy, far more problem-solving capacity. I find that when I'm angry with something, I don't just sit there and let it rest kind of thing. I do get motivated to do something about it because I don't like to be afraid. And so often the best way to stop yourself being afraid is to take your fears head on. I'm afraid of the New World Order. Well, who do I know that represents the New World Order in my local neck of the woods? Ah, I know. My Prime Sinister, who's a former banker who used to work for Merrill Lynch. I'm going to go ambush him with a camera. And because I went to go and ambush him with a camera, my bollocks swollen even more. And then at that point, I no longer needed Alex Jones to inspire me because I became my own inspiration, right? You can be an inspiration for others, but just so long as you are an inspiration for yourself, you don't need necessarily those others. But not everybody's like me or you, Menace, who is capable of self-motivating like that. And they do, instead of getting out there and starting to do something in their own particular way, they'll sit and they'll continue to listen to people who've told them things that they kind of already know.
I agree. I couldn't agree anymore. Now, my argument with Alex Jones is his consistency in his work. I mean, here have this great case of study here be talking about. Couple of weeks come to find out they here go back and contradict himself, or here say it in such a way that isn't consistent, like I just said. And I think there's a rhythm to his work and his way of articulating his passion about things that isn't sincere all the time. I think, like I say, he does tend to have a way to make himself seem like a fearmonger, if that makes any sense. Now, I'm not discrediting all of his work, because like you, he's one of the people I had first got up on. But for the most part, it's his consistency I have an issue with. But then that's a flaw that everybody has. So I can't, for me to, you know, discredit him solely off the strength of that would be kind of foolish of me, when I'm the same way to an extent, I suppose.
Yeah, well, see, we all are, and this is why you're not supposed to put people up on pedestals, because it actually puts a lot of there's a lot of effort to get them up there. And the funny thing is, every time somebody gets on a pedestal, they always fall from it, and they fall on the people who put them on that pedestal in the first place every time. So if you don't want to get crushed, don't put nobody up there. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleed of uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong
Welcome
with
back.
The world? People kill people, that other people.
This is a song by Genocide. You can go see his website. He's a real awesome dude. Muslim, watched his family and his kind of town get slaughtered in Bosnia by some Serb activity there. And now he lives in New Zealand and makes anti-New World Order rap. So it's genocideramp.com. And yeah, he's one of a number of artists. And I like to have artists on the show because music's the most powerful medium next to video, I think, with how to basically invade people's minds, right? It's one of the most powerful brainwashing mediums, essentially. And not only do I claim to have no credibility, but I also claim to be a rampant propagandist. And every time that you tune into this show, I am trying to brainwash you in some way or another into knowing the truth rather than believing a lie. Because as Howard Zinn said, who's a famous civil rights activist during the civil rights movements in the United States, he said, one truth can shatter 1,000 lies. And if you can brainwash people into believing lies, you can certainly brainwash them into knowing the truth.
Exactly. And speaking of the truth, I'm not sure how up on the zeitgeist theory you are, Vinny. How up on the zeitgeist theory are you?
Pretty well. A lot of the guys who run the Zeitgeist movement in New Zealand are personal friends of mine. I don't join organizations, though. I wouldn't want to really be part of one that would have me as a member.
Right. No, I totally respect that. Now, yeah, I actually have a couple of friends who run it. They were my friends, too, over here in Wales. And I'd actually went to, I believe it was called Z-Day, Zeitgeist Day, the other day, last Sunday, if I'm right. And, you know, there was a lot of dialogue, a lot of conversations about actual structure of how it would work and what people should do. I was just curious as to what your thoughts were on the Zeitgeist theory and if you see it happening ever in the future. I mean, they had a thought that their point was that one of the main distractions in society is glamour, and what the Zeitgeist theory doesn't have is glamour. Like, there was a rugby game, for example, prior to Z-Day happening in Wales. Now, you take a rugby game, there's a lot of glamour attached to it, from merchandising and the actual game and the stadium itself. What the Zeitgeist theory doesn't have is glamour. There's no presentation. It is what it is. It says what it says on the tin. There's no appeal, there's no attraction for anybody younger, which I think should change if you want people to get involved and be a part of it. Now, their point was that glamour was a bad thing and it should be eliminated from society. But I think glamour can't be eliminated because essentially greed is a form of glamour. Glamour essentially is greed. They're two in the same. They're one in the same, should I say. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on, you know, in as far as you know, distractions such as glamour and how it has an impact on the Zeitgeist theory.
Well, it was an interest. I'll tell you an interesting incident. When the Zeitgeist 3 screened in New Zealand, the Zeitgeist boys they rented a movie theater downtown, and everybody had to be charged $10 for entry. I didn't get charged $10 for entry because I'm Mr. News. I was there to film it and, you know, participate in the discussion, that kind of thing, and put it up on YouTube later on because, you know, a lot of these guys are my mates and it's alternative media and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Even if I agree or don't agree with what people do, it's still a good idea to just sit there, record it, and upload it. Because if you sit there, record it, and you don't upload it, then nobody else gets to actually participate in the conversation, see what was said, or become part of the solution because they don't know what's going on, right? Now, what I found was a lot of people there who aren't really awake people, right? We're talking about people who are more obsessed with trends, for instance, rather than substance to a degree. To the point in which there was one guy there who had a Zeitgeist T-shirt on. Now, this Zeitgeist T-shirt had an eye at the top of it, a pyramid made of light that was coming out in rays out of the eye with the word Zeitgeist coming down the side.
Right.
And I asked him, do you know what that eye and that pyramid symbolizes? And he goes, oh, I don't care about any of that. You know, wow. I don't like you. And you know, it's like, wow. Really? Yeah.
Really? See, what I find interesting about that story is the fact that they were even charging for this screening. I mean, isn't...
Oh, because they had to rent out a movie theater, a proper movie theater.
I get that, but doesn't the Zeitgeist theory support the fact that we should live in a society with money, you know?
Well, they do believe that that's where we should be going, but they're not stupid enough to think that that's where we already are.
But surely to screen the film between these organizers, they would have had enough money to be able to do that without charging the public. I don't know. Maybe not. Okay.
Zeitgeisters don't believe in money, hence they're all broke. So.
yeah.
You know, that's basically how it is. But like, for instance, you know, I don't really have much spare money to throw around. I mean, we have people who subscribe to the show, buy products off the website, things like that. And for the first time ever, I'm now actually able to support myself without wondering where the frack is my next lot of money coming from. But the important thing to note about Zeitgeist is that I think it's part of an awakening rather than its entirety and a realization of the dream. Like, for instance, let's say global warming. Plenty of Zeitgeist people still believe in that hogwash and think that a carbon tax would be a good idea. Or Peak Oil, which said we're going to run entirely out of oil by like the year 1994, I read in one old book that was printed in the 70s kind of thing. And they go, Peak Oil is going to be this time, Peak Oil is going to be that time, or we've already hit it or whatever. But the oil just keeps on flowing and coming, doesn't it? You know, there's no such thing as an oil shortage. There's a there's an oil cartel restriction on supply, surely. But a lot of the people in Zeitgeist, no idea about that whatsoever when I told them in the movie theater. And this is the thing. It's not a comprehensive understanding of all of the eclectic networks and inputs and throughputs of the current system itself. And unless you comprehend the current system, it's not going to be possible for you to create a new one to replace it. Because if you don't know what is, you certainly won't know what can be.
Yeah, it makes sense.
On top of that, there's this collectivist mindset as well, which always concerns me. Whenever anybody talks about doing something for the greater good, that's a little red flag that goes up. If they talk about taking rights from people in any way, shape, or form, or trying to abolish certain things, that's another red flag that goes up. If they are telling you that everything's going to be sweet as once we've been given all this power, that's another red flag that goes up. If they're saying they're going to solve all problems, that's another big red flag that goes up. And Zeitgeist is full of those. On top of that, there's sort of a discrimination against other people. For instance, you know, we were talking earlier about Alex Jones. Well, in this third Zeitgeist installment, there's a section in the film when people in the audience on the film, you know, stand it up and say, "Hey, that's communism. That's this. That's that."
Yeah.
And there's this one person who stands up who's sort of balding and a little bit chubby, going, "Death to the New World Order! Death to the New World Order!" And it sounded exactly like a dig at Alex Jones. Now, you don't create positive movements that are based on love and light and progress. progress by simply attacking people that are currently working around it. The people who criticize you are the most important people of all, because they're the people who will challenge your theories to see whether or not they stand up on their own and hold any weight. You know, that's how scientists, and just remember, Zeitgeist is supposed to be promoting the scientific method here. That's how scientists are actually supposed to view things, as a flawed, infallible hypothesis as everything. But in Zeitgeist, for a lot of the people that I've met and know, and other people are my friends, it's not a point of criticism on their personalities as people or anything. They're simply kind of like unbelievers or sort of like a religion to a degree. And there was a time when I was called a conspiracy theorist by one of the people at Zeitgeist. And another time where I told one of the guys about Monsanto and United States food legislation and things of that nature, saying that they'll give you fines if you have a home garden, things like that. And I told him, this is coming here. And he goes, oh, no, that's just fruity. That's conspiracy theory. It can never happen here. What happened last year? Oh, yeah, that's right. Monsanto drafted food legislation comes into New Zealand that's going to fine people for even so much as sharing a cabbage with their neighbor, and armed Monsanto employees with no training necessary, immune from prosecution of criminal or any other kind, can come onto your place without a warrant and do stuff to you. Okay, that's kind of the naivety of some of the people in Zeitgeist, but it's not a reflection of the entire movement. This is right. Just something I've seen that hasn't been taken out from there. But likewise, anybody who follows any movement, you're going to have lots of people like that who are simply there because it's trendy and they don't really fully understand it. The leaders of the movement sometimes themselves don't even fully understand it. And if that's the case, then you wonder to what extent are people who believe in a lot of things or follow a lot of different movements and whatnot, to what degree are they actually capable of being manipulated to serve something that otherwise they wouldn't want?
It was interesting because there was a lot of terminology being thrown around, a lot of names, and a lot of names people in the audience weren't agreeing with. One person had described the Zeitgeist as being revolutionary, to which another guy had said, you can't call it revolutionary, it's evolutionary. So these guys are having a back and forth discussion about the names it was called, rather than the substance attached to it, which I think goes back to what you were just talking about, it being a trend. I mean, it's not, how do you feel about that? These names attached to things today.
Names and actions. They're two things that are very, very exclusive. You know, what you say and what you do. Okay. Let's draw the distinction here. I'm saying that I'm evolutionary, or I'm saying that I'm revolutionary. Am I? All right. What does revolution mean? Revolution, as far as I know, if anybody's ever been in a car and you've seen the dial there, revolutions per second, it means to go in a circle. You know, so if you want a revolution, just sit here and eventually, in the end, everything will come back to the beginning. If you want evolution, you must recognize that evolution is a very slow process and it can't really be hurried along, right? So you can't really call yourself an evolutionary movement because you won't be alive by the time that movement's finished. On the other hand, if it's a constructive movement, well, let's say, for example, Zeitgeist Worldwide creates a project, like an actual physical project, just one project in one country, for example. Let's say you wanted to build that fancy schmancy maglev train thing going from California, LA, from LA to New York. Or from LA to Vegas, even, you know, start off with a bit of a shorter project at first, and see if the Zeitgeist people can come up with the resources globally to build this one thing. Now, I would venture a guess that there'd be no way that they'd be able to come up with the amount of resources that it would take to accomplish that. The resources are there, as the theory goes, but the motivation for people to donate said resources to donate said time to construct said object, etc. All of those people who would otherwise be getting paid $1 million salaries would be expected to pay, to not get paid and give up their millions of dollars worth of stuff in order to build this project, which is just some group's idea of the way things should be. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying that have a look at the gravity of the situation that you're dealing with here and those kind of barriers that exist to creating the Zeitgeist movement viable. Now, the other methodology that they seem to be using, which I think is probably the smartest method, is spreading. Right, spreading the message, spreading the movements online and what have you. But again, have a look at, say, Occupy Wall Street. Whole bunches of people organized down there, running their own kitchens, you know, negotiating with police, local councils and stuff like that in over 2,000 cities in the world. What's it accomplished? Nothing. Okay, absolutely nothing. It's been you've been sprayed in the face, so you've depleted the local municipal supply of pepper spray, perhaps to a minor degree, and you've given justification for the big bankers to give huge amounts of extra money to police departments so they can have all new laptops and whatnot in their cars for surveilling people and pulling up people's records and even accelerating a bigger police state. So you have a look at good-intentioned people and well-directed people, and you will see the very, very stark difference between them. And again, it's only dependent on what they accomplish. And that usually takes leadership, you know, because collectives don't normally accomplish much. You know, have a look at the collectives of society. Have a look at the revolutions that have been fought throughout history. And very few of them have not been financed by bankers, and fewer still have involved more than a few percent of a population in order to throw off an incredibly powerful tyrant. And it happens all the time. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Menace, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Final segment today. Thank you all, especially the hardcore listeners in the chat room at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Love you very much, from Bariloche. What were we talking about just before the break? Oh, yes. We're talking about if you want to have a movement, it needs to be shaped not entirely like unlike a pyramid, okay? Except instead of all the power being concentrated at the top and all of the work being concentrated at the bottom of the pyramid, holding all the rest of the top up, you got to flip it on its end. And you've got to make it wide at the base and narrow at the tip, okay? Now, this is how you can get a movement through, is if you've got a huge amount of people involved and they're involved in it for one purpose that is well understood and easy to comprehend by everybody. This is why I think, you know, if you wanted to do Zeitgeist or Occupy Wall Street or whatever and do it, practice it effectively, you know, and create real change, you need one and only one demand. Make charging interest illegal. It's just that simple. You can't have an economy under the control of private bankers who have the ability to create money out of nothing and charge you interest for it. If they can create it out of nothing, but they can't charge interest on it, it becomes useless for them because they can't control you. Because you don't have to work for the rest of your life to pay off significant amount of debt that keeps mounting up. They can't loan huge quantities of cash to your government, as the case of the IMF does, in exchange for seizing control of your natural resources and state-owned enterprises. Okay? They can't do that anymore. So that's why all of these movements that are based on huge changes in every single sector will never get anywhere. Because it's kind of like a spider web, really. But it's a spider web that's spread too thin. And so the flies just go straight through it. They don't even notice it's there.
No, I like that. I like the way you explained that. That makes sense.
Now, speaking of which, controversial stuff and self-censorship, I always encourage people to when they come on the show, plug their websites and the things that they do, as well as tell us things that they probably wouldn't normally say for fear of, you know, being ridiculed or whatever. So ridicule yourself away.
Put me in a spot. Okay. Ridicule myself. What to say? I don't think I'm going to do that right now because I'll probably embarrass myself to your listeners. But I will give a couple of links, if that's okay. Just a couple of shameless plugs. So for there's everybody,
it's like I always say, man. There's nothing shameful about shameless self-promotion.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. So as I said earlier on the show, I co-manage and host a radio show called The Friday Night Live Show. It's a hip-hop show. We tend to gear more towards the underground. Well, I say we geared more towards the underground. Whatever's good's good, but it's more so obviously underground stuff that is good nowadays. So it's a hardcore hip-hop show, which you can hear at conspiracyuk.com, and you can check our show archive at conspiracyblog.net. Another shameless plug coming up, Vincent. Guests next week include Boots Riley from The Coop, Oakland group called The Coop, Tech9, who's making a lot of noise right now in the States, a guy called Hobson.
Well, hold on a second. Was that a really lame pun? A guy named Tech9, which is like a machine pistol or something.
That's his name. That's his name. He's YouTube Tech9 for everybody who hasn't heard him. He's very dope, very dope. So yeah, live every Friday, 5 PM EST, 10 PM GMT UK time. Yeah, conspiracyblog.net is a show archive. In addition to Conspiracy, I do a magazine called The Hard Copy Magazine, which you can check out at facebook.com/thehardcopy. In fact, just follow me on Twitter. I follow everybody back, and you'll be able to get updates on everything I'm talking about. Follow me at Menace UK, simply Menace UK, all one word. So, and I give you updates. So, yeah.
Yeah. Updates on the menace. Speaking of the menace, what do you personally believe is humanity's single gravest threat right now?
Greatest threat or gravest threat, did you say?
I think they're one and the same.
Okay. Right now. I would just say I think it really stems back to what we were just talking about with regards to, you know, self knowledge and self discipline. I think a lot of people right now don't want to grow. A lot of people wanna go through life as opposed to grow through life. And a lot of people don't have discipline to grow through life. And I think not having a knowledge yourself and not having a discipline for oneself can be dangerous. I think that's one of the biggest threats, because not only does it affect, you know, everybody around you, but ultimately and essentially, it's going to affect yourself, your personal growth. I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, for me personally, that would be the greatest threat. And that always will be the greatest threat, self-growth. I don't know if that's too generic. I mean, what do you think?
Well, it's like about personal power, essentially. You know, the only way you can grow is if you recognize just how powerful you are. You know, we get raised and told many, many times, we do even see examples of it from time to time, that we are powerless and we're not strong enough, and there's always somebody who's smarter and better than us and what have you. And people see that as, instead of a challenge to be overcome, they see that as, and I love this phrase because I hear it all the time, just the way things are.
People are comfortable. People are too comfortable nowadays. And I think that's, I think comfort is the enemy of progress, you know, in a nutshell. And for me, like I said, this is just my opinion. I think that's the greatest threat, you know. But, of course, like we were saying earlier, there's so many things beyond that. You know, like what's going on all across the world. There are big threats, and not just threats to certain countries, but threats to us all.
Oh, but let's think about the positive side of things. What do you think is the best things that are going on right now?
Me being on the show? I think we were talking
could
about
be worse.
What's that?
It could be worse.
I think art is really creative and fresh right now. There's a lot of great artists doing their thing right now. Not just, you know, at musical, but, you know, you got a lot of great visual artists. I think art definitely inspires me. And I think art definitely inspires life. So that's, for me personally, that's some of the greatest things going on right now.
I like the surge of the truth movement and
how is
social commentary, right? Like, I've noticed now, and this has changed only in the last maybe year or so, that people where they wouldn't want to broach these topics ever with me, they now actually come and start conversations with me about these sorts of things. And it's like, wow, people are waking up. There is actually some real palpable and demonstrable effect that truthers are having on the world. So it truly flies in the face of that philosophy. This is just the way things are and you can't change it, because you see them changing every day. And that's what's really inspiring for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that too. I mean, I can't overlook that. You know, having been, like I said, to the Zeitgeist Day the other day, which I know is a different form of truth we're speaking about. But for me, again, that was, excuse me, very inspirational. And this movement's like that. They do inspire me, and I think do inspire other people. You know, they can only be positive. You know, it's productive and it's positive. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like we are the free energy device that we've been waiting for, basically, because we've got infinite positive energy that we could be pumping out, or infinite negative energy that we could be pumping out. You know, until it comes down to, are you going to make a choice? You know, are you going to be Mr. Negative again? Are you going to walk into this party and try and steal one of my Stella Artois bottles off me? You son of a bitch!
Yeah, you can either choose to be negative or you can choose to live positive. And I think what you're doing and what I'm trying to do is positive. And I think ultimately that's going to be a reflection of the people we know and deal with, interact with, you know, on a daily basis. How, you know, it's going to, you know, you rub off on them.
Yeah. It's like I say, man, there's 7 billion people out there. Sorry. And why would you want to spend 1 minute of your limited time here on this planet with people who don't inspire you, don't encourage you, and don't teach you anything?
Exactly. Exactly. Each one teach one, right?
Yeah. You know, all we can do in this life is just learn what we can, and in time use what we've learned to teach others to do the same. You know, the cycle continues. And I think it's about recognizing our part in the cycle and just how important it is just to play your part in any given cycle. That makes it important. The problem is that now people have become acceptance of the fact that we're in a downward cycle spiral kind of thing. And, you know, me, I don't like going down. I prefer going up. And I'm 6'4" because I've kind of gotten used to it.
Yeah, I think it goes back to this word we mentioned earlier, this horrible word fear, and people just living through fear right now, and they don't need to, you know, they really don't need to.
Yeah, fear stops you from thinking, people, don't do it. Right, well, thank you very much, Menace. And
thank you, it's been a pleasure, man, it's been fun.
Yeah, it's nice in the late evening there in the Uber Kingdom tonight, and I hope you have a nice snuggly time in bed and whatnot.
I'm going to do just, I'm going to have my coffee or hot chocolate, one of the two, and hit the bed sheets. And I look forward to getting you on my show sometime soon and you plug into your audience when that date will be and being on the show again, hopefully in the future.
Indeed. ASAP is the way it should always be. Menace, ladies and gentlemen, I think you can probably search him up on the sites and what have you. The archives of this radio program will also be posted to the YouTube channel Mr. News Guerrilla Media. They will be posted ad-free and containing ads at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. So if you're a subscriber and you want to have commercial-free archives every day, you can subscribe for $5 a month and we'll get those out to you. Well, thanks, Menace, and you have yourself a nice night. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in, and we'll see you again sometime at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.